Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL podcast with Dan Hansis and Mark Sessler wherever you get your podcasts.
Final hour of the program this week. It's After Hours on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports. Logan Weber here alongside my producer for tonight's program, Jacob Mustard. And there at the end of hour number two, we were talking about Royals baseball and talking about, you know, kind of pumping the brakes a little bit on the Jack Caglione situation. And like I said, for the most part, I feel like people are, for the most part, very realistic in their expectations of Jack. Somebody in the text line there towards the end was saying, have you ever heard of the term, if you don't use it, you lose it? They said, have you ever, you know, talking about he needs to pitch. I know they want to bring him up as a hitter, but it's breaking my heart. He was literally recruited from Florida to pitch. You at least got to kick the wheels. He can do like Otani, except for maybe every other time pitches. It's definitely a no-lose situation if he's got it. If he does not, no harm done. And yes, there's something to be said for if you don't use it, you lose it. But you can test him out as a pitcher at the AA and AAA level if they want to do that. I don't believe they do. I know that he throws 100 miles an hour and that's always going to grab everybody's attention. And I don't blame you for it grabbing your attention because it is, I mean, it causes your eyes to pop, right? Whoa, triple digits. His numbers at Florida don't wow you. In 2 years pitching at Florida, 2023 and 2024, he started 34 games. He went 12-6, not bad, with a 4.55 ERA. He walked 105 batters to 170 strikeouts. His walks and hits per innings pitched was just under a 1.5. In fact, his second year at Florida was worse than his first time. His senior year was worse than his junior year. This past season, he went 5-2 with a 4.76 ERA in 16 starts. He struck out 83 compared to 87 the previous year. He walked 50. He gave up 10 home runs, and he gave up 39 earned across 73 2/3 innings. I understand the knee-jerk reaction to, oh, he throws so hard, though. He's an elite bat, folks. I don't think he's the caliber of Shohei Ohtani. I don't. I'm sorry. As a hitter, he can give you 40 bombs. I mean, he can hit 40 home runs. In Kauffman, playing 81 games a year in Kauffman, he can hit 40 home runs and drive in 100 RBIs over the course of 162 game season, playing half of them at home in that, you know, very pitcher friendly ballpark. Why risk that with the pitching side? And again, why rush it? He's a prospect, brother. You got to develop. That's what the minor league system is for. That's what I'm saying. Why call him up to the show when he may not be ready? Because he's got to play the field too, and he can't play first or DH because that's kind of bogged up with Salvi and Vinny and Michael Massey. So you're going to waste a service year or two on him being a depth or a platoon guy out of the lineup and pitching every once in a while? Let him do that in Double A and Triple A. Let him play right field and hit every day in Double A and Triple A and throw him out there to pitch every once in a while if you want him to. Develop him at the minor league level where it's designed for, what it's designed to do, rather than trying to call him up and make something happen that may end up, you know, not working out. And then you stunted his development because you moved too soon, too fast. Just my thoughts on the matter. 913-586-7965. Former Kansas City Chief announced his retirement today. Mitch Morse, who spent, you know, several years of his career, the start of his career with the Kansas City Chiefs. He went to Mizzou, where he was a starting center, and played for the Tigers from 2010 to 2014, drafted by the Chiefs in the second round in 2015. He was on the roster from 2015 to 2018, and then spent another 4 or 5 years with the Buffalo Bills. And this past season, he was with the Jacksonville Jaguars. So after 10 years in the league, the 32-year-old Mitch Morse calling it a career for the former Mizzou legend. Spent a great deal of his time in his career. Early part of his career was drafted by the Kansas City Chiefs. And we were talking earlier about guys requesting trades. That person in the text line clarified, said, sorry, I don't want him up. I just want him to pitch. Obviously, develop in the minor league. Okay, sounds good. Yeah. Yeah, if you want him to try to pitch, sure. But you make sure you can do it in the minors before you try something in the major league. So I appreciate you clarifying there. We were talking about DK Metcalf requesting a trade. Trey Hendrickson has been, the Bengals have approved him to seek a trade partner. Kirk Cousins doesn't sound like a guy that is comfortable being the backup in Atlanta. Kirk Cousins requested a meeting with the ownership of the Atlanta Falcons this week, met with Arthur Blank, and said, hey, listen, man, I don't want to be a backup quarterback. It's like, I want you to either trade me to a team that needs a starting quarterback or outright release me. And Arthur Blank said Wednesday, no pun. No, we're not going to just release you. We're not just going to outright cut you. And Kirk Cousins has a no trade clause. Blank said during the meeting that they will do what is best for the organization, whether that is keeping him or trading him. Whatever is best in their eyes for the Atlanta Falcons is what's going to happen. I believe at this point, if Geno Smith gets you a third, I don't think Kirk Cousins gets you a third. Not at this point. Not after a lackluster year that saw him get benched for a rookie. I think at best you're getting a fourth out of Kirk Cousins. And if you're not fully sold on Michael Penix, or if you think Michael Penix needs a little bit more seasoning and you want a veteran guy as a backup quarterback in Kirk Cousins to help Michael Penix along the way, I mean, that's a lot of money. That's a lot of guaranteed money for a mentor as your backup quarterback. But I don't know. Something tells me Kirk Cousins is going to be the backup quarterback for the Atlanta Falcons week one. Because I think Atlanta might get more trade value out of him during next season than they would right now during the offseason. Or at least until you wait to see what happens with the draft and with Sam Darnold. That's just my opinion on the matter. I don't see the Atlanta Falcons just being willing to part with Kirk Cousins right now. When I look at teams that are quarterback needy across the league right now, I look at the Seattle Seahawks, who are all in on the Sam Darnold situation. I look at the New York Giants. I don't think that they have enough for the Falcons to really consider, because they need all the picks they can find right now. Honestly, if Sam Darnold goes to Seattle, Kirk Cousins traded back to Minnesota? Kirk Cousins back to the Vikings? Yes? No?
I mean, the only thing against that is they didn't want to pay him the contract in the first place. So unless you can get the Falcons to eat some of the cap in the trade back, I don't see them not just rolling out J.J. McCarthy and be like, well, we can sign somebody else as a veteran. We could get Aaron Rodgers there and fulfill the...
The prophecy. Yes, sir. Yeah, I don't believe in it either. I was just, throwing the hypothetical out there of a little reunion in Minnesota. No, if Darnold walks and he goes to, say, Seattle, J.J. McCarthy is going to be their starting quarterback. My thoughts on it. But I look around the rest of the league and I'm like, what other team in the league needs a starting quarterback? Other than the Giants. In that scenario, if Sam Darnold signs with the Seahawks, J.J. McCarthy is going to be the Vikings starting quarterback. I look in the AFC West. You've got your quarterbacks. Raiders just traded for Geno. Broncos have Bo Nix. Chargers have Herbert. And, of course, the Chiefs have Patrick Mahomes.
Titans or Jets, maybe.
Maybe.
Depends on how the draft shakes out, especially if the Titans pick a Ward or Sanders.
Right. Which, I mean, if the Titans take Abdul Carter, then yeah, I could see it. The Jets, I could certainly see a situation there, but are the Jets just going to be super willing to pay a veteran quarterback that amount of money again, like they just did with Aaron Rodgers and it completely blew up in their face?
It's the Jets, so probably. What about the Colts and continuing their dysfunctional benching of Anthony Richardson?
Yeah, and they've expressed a willingness. They've expressed a desire to find a veteran quarterback, to create a quarterback competition between whoever that guy is and Anthony Richardson.
I also saw reports that Justin Fields wants to go back to the Steelers, but the Steelers aren't eager to re-sign him right away. They may be testing their markets. That could be something where Mike Tomlin wants a veteran quarterback. You could see them potentially enter the sweepstakes with Kirk Cousins.
Somebody in the text line said, if Atlanta trades, won't they have to pay the majority of the contract, or is that all part of the trade negotiation? If they were to do it before June 1st, yes. If they traded Kirk Cousins before June 1st, they would save only $2.5 million, but they would take on $37.5 million in dead money for this year, $25 million next year, and $12.5 million in 2027. But I believe if they wait until after June 1st, they would only take on that dead cap hit for this year. So they would lose out on that saved money, that 2.5, plus the 37.5. So they would pay, it would be $40 million in dead money to move him off your roster, but you wouldn't pay the roughly $37.5 million over the course of 2026 and 2027. At least that's the way that I'm reading that as of right now. A post-June 1st trade would incur $12.5 million of dead money in each of the next 3 years. So I did read that wrong. But a cap savings of $27.5 million this year and $45 million combined in 26 and 27. So you would pay $37.5 million over the course of 3 years, but you would save
almost 90. 80. Yeah, I was going to say almost 90 million there.
Yeah, 82 and a half. You would save, or excuse me, you would save $72.5 million. So you'd save 50 billion bucks over the lifetime of it.
And they've expressed that they're not really willing to trade him. They're in no hurry to trade him right now.
Yeah.
And Kirk Cousins, doesn't he also have the no trade clause?
Correct.
So they have to work with him, and that, you know, those things draw out. And
yeah, but if you're the guy, if you're the guy requesting the trade, like, you're going to say, hey, I want you to trade me, and then they find a trade, and you're like, no, I don't want that trade.
Well, you know, what if they send him to be a backup?
That's walking around in circles.
Yeah. I mean, the no trade clause is definitely muddy the water a little bit, but
yeah. Yeah, no question. 913-586-7965. That same person said, that's insane. Yeah. It's the quarterback market in the NFL today, I guess. Somebody in the text line in 816 asked, why are MLB players drafted if they're not expected to perform in the bigs ASAP? They need to adopt the NFL draft process. It's hard. Firstly, it's borderline impossible. An NFL roster has 53 guys, right? The NBA draft, of the 60 guys drafted in an NBA draft, maybe at most 15 of them pan out and become starters or reliable role players in the NBA. In Major League Baseball, you've got a 25-man roster, right? 25 guys on the MLB roster. But an entire organization might have 100 players between AAA, AA, High A, Low A, rookie ball. I mean, there's just so many guys coming out. And baseball, even more so than football or basketball or any other sport, is so unbelievably hit or miss. So unbelievably hit or miss. Like when the Royals took Luke Hochaver number one overall, everybody was like, that is a home run, slam dunk. Pfft. Bubba Starling was a home run, slam dunk. It's baseball as a sport is so, I mean, football and basketball are hard too, but I feel like they have got a bigger grip on the scouting process than baseball does.
Well, yeah, I just, you know, I looked up some quick statistics and you were right. You were almost right on the nose. It's the average NBA player that makes it is about 12 in a draft to contribute to a team, probably more in the role playing or like a role player spot. And the MLB, fewer than 1 in 10 players drafted actually make it to the MLB. And it was like some guy did a statistic, 2005 to 2015, only 26.9% of the players who signed made it to the MLB.
Yeah.
So it's a very, very small pool out of a large draft as well. How many rounds are in the MLB draft? Isn't it like, it's up there.
Yeah, it's quite a few. And I mean, and you think about Major League Baseball, right? Football doesn't allow it. College basketball doesn't allow it. In baseball, high school players can get drafted. That's not allowed in the other two sports. In football, you got to be 21 years old or 3 years removed from college. In basketball, you got to be 19 or a year removed from high school. Or three, yeah, in football, it's 21 or 3 years removed from high school, excuse me. Basketball, 19 and a year removed. In baseball, you can get drafted at 17. And then you got to think about the international guys, right? I mean, Salvador Perez was like 15, 16 when he signed with the Royals, right? It just...
The NBA has something similar to that, where if they will spend a pick in one draft on a kid who's 18 or right. 19 overseas, who's on like a two-year contract.
I can't remember what that's called exactly.
It's a weird draft process, but they're allowed to scout the overseas players as well.
Yeah, and typically they'll use like a second round pick on that.
There have been some lottery picks that have been that, but it's you see it less and less.
Very much so. And I mean, you think about in college, in the NFL, you got 53 man roster, you've got another, you know, 10 to 15 guys on your practice squad minimum. And there's 32 teams across the league. And in college football, yeah, there's 100 guys, 105 guys now officially on scholarship on a roster in college football, and there's, you know, hundreds of teams spread out between D1, D2, FBS, FCS, all the things. But only a select few guys play. It's just harder, man. The numbers are tough. Major League Baseball has 20 rounds in their draft. 20 rounds. So it just doesn't, yeah.
It's called draft and stash, by the way.
Draft and stash, that's right. Another texter on the text line said, that texter needs to realize the two hardest things in life is making a woman happy and hitting a 100-mile-per-hour fastball. Well, that one made me laugh, but I'm not going to agree because my wife might be listening. 913-586-7965. Logan Weber here alongside Jacob Mustard. A couple more segments remaining. Stick around. We're going to talk a little college basketball here on After Hours on 96.5 The Fan.
Hey, y'all. Poodle and Maddie here from Reality Gaze. Grab your favorite thong because for the first time, we're heading to the villa for the new season of Love Island USA.
I can't wait to watch Ariana babysit these shiny, oiled up adults who I'm pretty sure aren't there for the right reasons.
From the home wrecking bombshells to the absolute wreckage of movie night.
Pull up a daybed and join us every Wednesday for all the Love Island USA drama.
Find Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcasts.
If you're a Mizzou, KU, or K-State men's basketball fan, buckle up tomorrow. We got some good ones. Let's begin in Columbia. Tomorrow, midday, I guess, late morning, we got an 11 a.m. tip at Mizzou Arena, as the 15th-ranked Tigers will play host to the 19th-ranked Kentucky Wildcats. Big game for a couple of different reasons. Firstly, for Mizzou, it's an opportunity to improve your seed line, right? Bounce back from a loss earlier this week and push yourself to 22-9, which in the SEC this year is a really impressive mark. But even more importantly, there is seeding on the line in this game. Look, you look at the SEC right now, you look at the middle of the pack at the moment, it is a logjam. You've got Auburn, obviously, number one. De facto, for sure. Florida sitting at 2, 13-4. You've got Bama at the 3 seed right now, 12-5 in the league. Tennessee is 11-6. And this is where things begin to get very, very interesting. Tennessee is 11-6. They got a matchup tomorrow afternoon against South Carolina. Now, South Carolina is the worst team in the SEC this year. 2-15 in the league. They're 12-18 overall. Tennessee should win that game and shore up that number 4 seed. Then things get out of hand. You've got Texas A&M, Mizzou, and Ole Miss all knotted up there, 5 through 7, all three sitting at 10-7 in the league. Texas A&M's got a matchup tomorrow on the road against LSU. Now, LSU's 3-14 in the league, but they have shown a proclivity for some upsets, especially in the top half of the SEC this year. Ole Miss, also sitting at 10-7 in the league, has got a matchup against number 5 Florida on Saturday. So, for Ole Miss, that's a tough one. So, Ole Miss loses to Florida. Florida goes to 14-4. They solidify themselves as the 2 seed in the league tournament. Ole Miss falls to 10-8. Mizzou's 10-7 in the league. Kentucky's 9-8. So if Mizzou were to lose to Kentucky, they would be tied with both Ole Miss and the Wildcats at 10-8 in the league. A win pushes you to 11-7 and ensures that you finish no lower than 6th in the league. But a loss could push you as low as 8th. And I know 6 seed versus 8 seed, how big a deal is that? I mean, an 8 seed in a 16-team conference means if you win your round 1, 8, 9 game, buckle up, you've got the 1 seed. Now, again, I'm going to check here to clarify what the SEC tournament bracket even looks like to see if that's how the bracket works. So, if they were to get the 6 seed, they would receive a first round bye, and they would play the winner of the 11 versus 14 game. If they win that game, they would take on the 3 seed in the quarterfinals. If they get the 8 seed, they would still get that first round bye. They would play the winner of the 9 versus 16 matchup in the second round, and that 9 seed right now in the SEC looks like it might be like the number 25 team in the country, Mississippi State. Or it could be Vanderbilt, a team that you lost to a couple of weeks ago. So, and then if you win that game, oh, guess what? You got a quarterfinal matchup against Auburn. Good luck. There are some implications to this game if Mizzou can get a win against Kentucky, solidify themselves as, at worst, the 6th seed in the league. If A&M was to lose to South Carolina, if A&M was to lose to LSU, you're the 5 seed all of a sudden. And that sets you up for a second round or a quarterfinal matchup against the 4 seed in Tennessee, who I think you got a shot at beating, despite the fact that they're the number 4 team in the country right now. I think this is a massive game. It's not going to affect your chances of making the NCAA tournament because you're pretty much a shoe-in at this point, but it can wildly affect your standings within the SEC, and it can affect your seed line right now. I think this is a big one tomorrow morning, late afternoon, for the Missouri Tigers. Then we go to Manhattan, 12:30 p.m. tip-off. Regular season finale for the Kansas State Wildcats, who got a win earlier this week. Back on Wednesday, I believe, they took down Cincinnati. They're going to host the 10th-ranked team in the country in the Iowa State Cyclones. Cyclones are 12-7 in the league, 22-8 overall. Wildcats' NCAA tournament chances are in the drain. 15-15. They're 9-10 in the league. But a win gives you an above 500 record for the regular season. You finish 500 in the league in a pretty solid Big 12 this year. And it gives you some confidence, some momentum that you won your last two games to close out the year. You swept Iowa State, a top 10 team in the country. You beat them on the road in Hilton, blew them out. And then you were able to take care of business at home, last game of the regular season, when you know that Iowa State's coming in fired up for this game. Big one for K-State. It's not going to affect your chances. You're not making the NCAA tournament. It's not happening. But you can save a little bit of face. You can say that you swept a top 10 team in America this year in your two meetings against them. Something to be said for that. You can kind of hold your head up high going into the Big 12 tournament next week and when you get into the offseason. And then you got the KU. You got Kansas. Jayhawks have got a matchup tomorrow afternoon at home. 3:30 tip-off on ESPN. Hosting Arizona. Whew. Wildcats are 20-10, but they've been great in the Big 12 this year. They're 14-5 in the league. Jayhawks are 10-9. A win for Kansas has a few different implications. You get a top 25 wins, quad one. That's going to help your seed line. You get to that 20-win regular season that we talk about oh so much when it comes to KU. You solidify an above 500 record in the Big 12. You go 11-9. A loss, you go 500 in the league. When's the last time that KU finished 500 or worse in their conference? I'd love to find that out. A loss keeps you from a 20-win regular season, which hasn't happened in quite some time. It pushes you to 9-12, and then calamity can ensue. Right now, Kansas is the 7 seed in the Big 12 tournament. Baylor is the 6. A win and a Baylor loss pushes you to the 6 line. A loss with a Baylor, you lose and you're at best the 7. But then you look at TCU, K-State, and West Virginia are all 9-10. And I don't know how the tiebreakers work, but there is then the possibility begins to creep in of those guys leapfrogging you, and you go from, oh, we're the 7 to, dear God, we're the 9? We're the 10 in the Big 12? Again, I don't think it affects your chances of making the NCAA tournament, but you go from a team on the 6 seed line, 7 seed line, to maybe you're an 8 seed. And you might be a first or a second round bounce from the Big 12 tournament, which I don't think anybody anticipated for the preseason number one team in America. Rough year for the Jayhawks. 913-586-7965. Somebody in the text line said, this sounds like basketball. Or basketball. Oh, I get it. Basketball. Classic movie. Creators of South Park put that movie together and starred in it, in case you weren't aware. We won't talk any more basketball or basketball, at least not collegiately, here for the rest of our program. 913-586-7965 is our number. We've got a few more messages here in the text line that I want to take a look at. And then I want to go through the fact that my wife and I bought a home today. We'll talk a little bit more about that on the other side here. You're listening to After Hours. Logan Weber alongside my producer for this evening's program, Jacob Mustard. This is 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
If you've been listening to the show at any point tonight, you may already be aware. But for those who just tuned in, I'll let you know. I became a home buyer today. My wife and I officially closed on our first home together in Grain Valley. We are extremely excited, extremely relieved. The home buying process It sucks. I got no other way to say it. It sucks. Buying a home is a friggin' nightmare. And I just want to say right off the bat, my wife is a wizard. My wife is incredibly, hands-on. She is one of those people that believes, if I want it done right, I'll just do it myself. And she was a part of every aspect of this home buying process. And she raises good points. I think you could probably tell by listening to me on the air here over the past couple of months, I have incredible bouts with ADHD and anxiety. And I don't always handle, high stress, high pressure situations like that well. I get frustrated. I shut down. And my wife is one of those people. Like I said, she is so driven. She is so passionate. She has so much belief in herself that she's like, I'm going to do this. If I want it done, I got it. This is my home and we're going to get it figured out. And I'm going to make sure that we get it figured out. And she was head first in this thing. And like I said, she's still living down in Springfield right now. So she has not only been trying to go through this home buying process pretty much by herself. She has been working with interns at her office in Springfield. She's been taking on students, externships down at her office in Springfield. Working on her transfer up here for her new job in Lee Summit. She's had a lot going on, and she just took it and ran with it on absolutely, extraordinary levels. And dear God, if it did not come to a friggin' head today, dude. So, like I said, we closed on the house this morning. Our appointment was at 9 o'clock. So we go into the title office, we sign everything over, right? Hey, we've got a house. We ask, hey, can we go look at the house? Because we had packed a bunch of cleaning supplies and stuff, and so we wanted to go through and maybe do a little bit of cleaning. We were going to bug bomb the house, use the little foggers to bug bomb the house and everything before we really got into the deep clean of it and moved everything in. And they're like, yeah, go ahead. So we get over there, and to make a long story short, an unfortunate situation unfolded. We were not supposed to be there, or at least somebody was supposed to be made aware that we were going over there, and that person was not made aware. So we end up in an uncomfortable situation where we get confronted about being in the house that we had just closed on, and given a fairly substantial closing cost check towards. And for a few hours there, because the seller of the home had not agreed to sell yet. Or they had agreed, but they had not actually signed everything over. Their appointment was after hours, which is apparently extremely out of the ordinary. Like I said, it's our first time buying a home, and nobody really told us much of anything. So we were kind of going through this blind, just figuring it out as we went along, just humpty-dumptying our way across it, and they're like, why did you sign before the seller signed? And we're like, we didn't know. Apparently they didn't know. Nobody knew. So there was a brief moment where the seller refused to sign. So then we're just in limbo of the seller won't sign the house over, but we just signed for the house. I'm like, what in the world is going on, man?
Why did the seller not want to sign? Just because you guys were too early, or... Did they give a reason?
It was his childhood home, and one of his parents had passed, and that's why the house was being sold. And I think he was coming by to kind of say goodbye to his childhood house, which we would all do in that situation.
Yeah, fair enough.
And they didn't know we were coming over, and we just showed up, and it was kind of overwhelming. And so for a brief moment there, my wife and I are in tears because we just went through this whole process, and now we may not have a house. And so we're just sitting there. We're like, oh, dear God, please don't do this. And we end up, we just drive over to Home Depot and we're looking at, wall outlets and outlet covers. And we're looking at doorknobs because we're going to change out all the locks and the deadbolts and all the things. And we're looking at carpet. We're looking at vanities and toilets and all the stuff, right? Because now the projects begin. and we've heard nothing. It's been 3 hours and we've heard nothing. So we end up reaching out, and again, another lack of communication. You know, we had sent a text 2 hours previously and had heard nothing. We sent a different text to a different person and they're like, oh yeah, everything's fine. And it's like, why weren't we told that 2 hours? We've just been sitting here for 3 hours not knowing if this is our damn house or not. We got the house. So everything's done. We signed it. They signed it. It's our house. Dear God. Somebody said the title company should be held liable. Oh, there's a lot of people that should be held liable. This was a freaking, it was a fiasco, dude. It was horrendous from the word go. It was so bad. It was so bad. Oh, somebody said you outkicked your coverage, huh? That is an understatement, my guy. Yes. Damn right I outkicked my coverage. My wife, and some, you know, some would say, oh, your wife sounds hard-headed. No, dude, she just, like, she's incredibly driven. Like, she has the image in her brain of how it's supposed to look and how it's supposed to go. And once she has that, she's going to do everything in her power to make sure that that's the way it's going to go. My wife is an absolute force of nature. And when she sets her mind to something, don't get in her way. I speak from personal experience. Don't get in her way. We bought a pantry a few years ago. She hates that I tell people this story, but it's one of my favorites. We moved into an apartment in Springfield, and it didn't come with a lot of cabinet space. So we bought, like, you know, a sort of generic, crummy $60 pantry off Amazon. One that comes in a big box, completely unassembled, and it's got 700 screws for 6 pieces of wood, and you got to put the whole thing together.
Yeah, your typical $60 pantry.
Yes. And so we get everything out, we put it on the living room floor, and we start the process of putting together this pantry. And 2 minutes in, my wife's like, just go, I'll do it myself. What? Like, I want to help. Please let me help you put this together. I don't want you to put this together by yourself. I know you don't feel like you have to put it together. You want to put it together by yourself, but it's our pantry. Like, I want to do this with you. And she's like, no, go sit down. So I did. I sat on the couch in our living room for more than an hour and watched TV while she sat 5 feet in front of me and put a pantry together. Okay. That's just who she is, man. She is incredibly driven. Yes, somewhat particular, but she's a phenomenal person. Somebody in the text line earlier, somebody made a joke about, like, the two hardest things to do in life is to make a woman happy and hit 100-mile-an-hour fastball. And somebody said, somebody in the text line said, I know your show is male focused, but seriously, these guys and bros that say the hardest thing to do is make a woman happy aren't trying. They simply aren't paying attention. Granted, where else better than a sports show to admit bro ain't got game? I've been married 20 years this April, and making a woman happy has never been a problem. Yeah, I mean, I don't claim to know everything there is to know about a woman. I feel like I know my wife pretty well. We've been together for 10 years, and I've learned, you know, based on my wife's body language, based on her mannerisms, based on, like, the tone in which she says something. Like, I can tell what my wife wants or needs based on the way she says my name. Like, if I hear it in one particular tone, I'm like, okay, she wants me to get her something to eat, or she wants me to refill her water, or she wants me to mess with the thermostat, or she wants me to go get something out from outside or whatever. I can sort of tell. And I'm not saying it's the simplest thing to do, just like I would not say to a woman that making a man happy is easy, although I do think it might be easier. It's about knowing your partner, knowing what that person likes and dislikes. Somebody said generational gap. Sit down, old timer. Damn. I'm not old, and I'm agreeing with him. Yeah, women are fickle creatures. Men are fickle creatures. Somebody said, sounds like your wife is the man of the house. She would appreciate you saying that. Somebody says, so your wife is the man in the marriage. She would appreciate you saying that. Yeah, my mother-in-law, when we finally got the closing date and everything, she's like, so what kind of, like, power tools and like equipment do you want for the garage? I looked my mother-in-law dead in the eyes and said, you know, I'm not the person to answer that question. Like, my wife grew up in the country with a father that works at the Ford plant in Clay Como, with an older brother who works at the Ford plant in Clay Como. They own a gutter and siding and roofing business on the side. They have renovated houses. They have rebuilt houses. They work on cars all day. Like, it's a hand. I mean, my wife was on, you know, job sites doing roofs and guttering at 7. I didn't learn how to change the brakes on a car till I was 16. Like, we just grew up differently, and she knows all that stuff and I don't. And I've learned over the years, and 10 years together, I've learned, obviously. But, buddy, I don't claim to know more than she does. She knows way more than I do. Hopefully I get there at some point. Somebody said, it's wild out here, bro. Yeah, I don't see. That's the one thing I can't speak on, is like what being single nowadays looks like. Dude, I'm 27 years old. I haven't been single since I was 15. My wife and I have been together for almost half of our lives on this earth at this point. I'm 27. My wife is 25. When we started dating, I had just turned 16 and she was almost 15. Like, that's all we knew. That's all we've known as teenagers and adults is each other. So yeah, I got no idea. No, like the first time somebody showed me Tinder, I was like, what in the world is that? It's an evil world we live in. You know that future quote? I don't know. All right. It's the end of that soapbox, talking about buying houses and whatever else. But yeah, we've had, it's been a journey.
What I've gotten out of this is you're almost 30.
I almost said something not FCC approved at you, Jacob. What?
Don't mind me. I'm only 23.
The hell, man. Was that necessary? Was that necessary?
You can be checking for gray spots when you get home.
I got a couple gray hairs on the side of my head. My wife and I discovered those a couple weeks ago.
I was gonna say, is it from her stressing you out or?
No. It's probably, she'll go gray before I do if that's the case. I stress her out way more than she stresses me out. Honest to God, I don't know what I'd be doing if I did not have. I am such a basket case, dude. I am straight up like, hey, what's going on today? I wake up every morning thinking, what am I going to eat? You know, like, I don't know. I'm just here, dude. It's my first time on this planet just like everybody else, and I have no plans. I am a classic overthinker who does not plan out anything. It is a dangerous combination. Like, I'll be like, hey, I should do this. And then I think of 100 scenarios of that thing. But I don't think about it until 2 minutes before it has to get done. And then I run through all the scenarios and decide if it's something worth doing or not. Not my wife. Nope. She plans it out months in advance. 913-586-7965 is our number. We'll come back, wrap up the show next. You're listening to After Hours here with Logan Weber alongside Jacob Mustard on 96.5 The Fan. Let the weekend begin. Just a few minutes left here on tonight's program. Friday night edition of After Hours on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber here with you, hosting tonight's show. My producer for the evening, Jacob Mustard. And man, Jacob, I'm looking at my show sheet here. We've covered a lot of information. We covered all the latest with the NFL. We covered the Royals' latest with spring training. Talked about the tempering of expectations on Jack Caglione and what his timetable to the big show looks like. Talked about Deion Dawkins being a moron and talking about how the Bills would have put on a better show than the Chiefs in the Super Bowl, despite the fact that they can't get there. We talked college basketball. We talked about my wife and I. We bought a house today. Officially, we are homeowners, so that's an exciting one there. How about we close out tonight's show with a little bit of this one is highly Chiefs related. I don't know if you had a chance to see this, but Matt Cassel, if you have seen it, I'm sure you know where I'm going with this. If you haven't, it's a wild story that Matt Cassel tells. Matt Cassel was on a podcast earlier this week with it was called Lots to Say with Bobby Bones is the host of the podcast. Now, Bobby Bones is a music guy, does a lot of stuff with like American Idol. And so he was on his podcast for some reason. I don't exactly know, but he was. And he asked, Bobby Bones asked Matt Cassel, you know, like, what has been like the most heated moment that you've ever had with like another player or a coach during your NFL career? And he goes into a very vivid retelling of an altercation that he had with Todd Haley during their time in Kansas City together. During this, Matt Cassel describes, you know, something happened, play. He decided to step up in the pocket, decided rather than get the ball away, he gets sacked, team's forced to punt. Todd Haley confronts him on the field, and this was the year that the Chiefs won the AFC West and got to the playoffs with Matt Cassel at quarterback, Todd Haley. I think they were playing the Tennessee Titans that year. And he said that, yeah, it was the final game of the year against Tennessee to win. If a win would win the AFC West, and they were winning, playing a good game. He took a sack. They were forced to punt, and him and Todd Haley got into it. And Todd Haley yelled at him. He snapped back. Haley benched him. The Titans go down and score. They kick off. Offense goes back out onto the field. Matt Cassel goes back out onto the field, defying Todd Haley's orders, goes back out onto the field. Todd Haley and the Chiefs coaching staff refused to call in a play. So Matt Cassel calls his own play at the line of scrimmage. And then they send in the backup and Matt Cassel gets pulled. He comes off the field and Todd Haley proceeds to start yelling at him again. They go, you know, they go three and out. They punt. Tennessee gets the ball back. They punt. Matt Cassel runs back out onto the field again. No play calls being called in. So he calls his own plays, gets a first down. And then he said, all of a sudden, my speaker turns on and they start calling in the plays to me again. They end up winning the game. They win the AFC West. And then later on, you know, after the win, Todd Haley and Matt Cassel have a meeting together and they sort of hash it out.
He called them out on there. You know what?
Yeah. What that did for me was give Matt Cassel a lot. I have a lot more respect for Matt Cassel and what he accomplished and what he endured during his time in Kansas City. And I somehow am even more mad at what Todd Haley accomplished or lack thereof didn't accomplish during his time in Kansas City. I somehow have a newfound respect for Matt Cassel based on that story. Is it true? Is it untrue? I don't know. It was a hell of a story. We had a hell of a show tonight. How about it? Somebody in the text line said, shout out to the Johnny Dare Morning Show for 32 years in Kansas City. Absolutely.
Isn't today their last day?
It is. I grew up listening to the Johnny Dare Morning Show. Grew up listening to Ponch and Nikki every morning growing up with my parents driving me to school. Sad day in radio, for sure. Nature of the business, though, I guess. That'll do it for tonight's program. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for all the well wishes and the congratulations for my wife and I buying our house. It's been a pretty extraordinary journey. We're excited. For my producer, Jacob Mustard, I'm Logan Weber. Thank you for joining us tonight on After Hours on 96.5 The Fan. Don't forget, folks, this is your home for Kansas City sports. We out.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. Just something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.